Hi and welcome to The Unschooled Space, the podcast that's here to help parents embrace their personal journey into unschooling with all the joy and challenges it's likely to bring. Each episode I look at different aspects of unschooling and talk with other parents about their experiences. This is episode 52 and I'm your host, Esther Jones. Don't forget to check out my website, which is esther-jones.com, and subscribe to my mailing list for all things deschooling and mindful parenting. And my January mindful parenting course is open now, and this course is particularly suitable for unschooling parents and parents of neurodivergent children. So today I'm chatting with Daniel Muller from Pennsylvania. Daniel is a former teacher and has a 10-year-old son called Kai, who has been unschooling for 4 years. And Daniel came across unschooling while struggling himself to reconcile many parts of the school system, and in particular the power over dynamic that he was expected to conform to as a teacher. Today we talk about how our own beliefs and responses are often rooted in our own experiences of this dynamic as children, and how to unpack it all and to reconnect with our deeper values, we need to have a lens of openness and curiosity, as well as being intentional about our actions and choices. You can hear more from Daniel and Kai on their podcast, which is called Unschooling with Kai. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hi, Daniel. Thank you so much for your time today. Lovely to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Great. Well, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your family and about your sort of journey to self-directed learning, unschooling?
The short answer is that I found a book at the library and it was on unschooling. And I was like, wow, like I read through it really quickly and checked in with my family and they were all like, can we do this? Can we make this happen? And we did it. And my parents were really supportive, which I know is not always the case. And they're like, we trust you. And so we jumped into it, and that was over 4 years ago at this point. The longer story, which I think you want to hear, and I want to tell it too, right?
Absolutely.
The longer story is I was a teacher and then kind of an administrator, almost teaching teachers at a large preschool / kindergarten, private, right? And it was, the curriculum was different than most preschools. It was centered on the kids' interests. So whatever the kids were interested in on 1 week, the next week there would be a curriculum written about that. So it was really attacking their interests in a very novel and meaningful way. I really liked that a lot. And it was like I fell into that job at a couple different locations. Well, at the first location, but moved around. And I really liked that brand and what it was like. So my son started out as an infant at one of those locations and then moved all the way up through kindergarten. And we were at this kind of precipice of that program. And I'm like, oh, this is so great. It's child affirming. It's really empowering that it's covering their interest. It's not just some random curriculum or something thematic like, hey, it's fall, so let's do apples, which is like something that everybody sees in preschools. And so I was excited about that. My child was, you know, for me, he was like a genius at that point. You know, I think all parents say that, but I said that as well. He was really smart. He was reading already. And he had so many interests and he was so creative in how he dealt with all of the things that he was engaging with. It was really interesting to see that. And then to think that next year that we would be transitioning to public school, it broke my heart a little bit. And I was like, I don't really see a way out of this. We don't have the money for like a private school. And so that's kind of where we were sitting. At the same time, I was also becoming a certified teacher. So I was going through like teaching practicum in classes and whatnot. And I also experienced a lot of that weird power over dynamic in school as a teacher. And it brought up a lot of my school past of how I was, you know, the one underneath all of that power over me.
Yeah.
And there was just such this really weird dynamic where I felt like I couldn't be successful as a teacher. And all the other teachers around me were saying like, look, you have to be in control. And I was like, well, I don't want to be in control of all these kids. I don't think that's helpful. Yeah. And it wasn't something that I could say because there was such this strong system in school that was saying that's how we control 20 to 30 children at one time. And it was interesting. The practicum that I did was not only suburban schools, but I also did like inner city schools around Philadelphia. So I saw the stark differences between, you know, how that control played out in Philadelphia versus in like the suburbs. And like really as a teacher, my control failed in Philadelphia. And then in the suburbs, I was like, okay, but still really hating it. So that was really hard and trying for me. And mix that together with the fact that my son was transitioning into public school at this point in a place that I not only thought that I didn't want to teach in, that I thought that most children didn't want to be in, and I reflected on my own past, and I just wasn't feeling good about that. And, you know, you can wrap in all the other things that weren't really like disempowering for children, like the fact that they can't go to the bathroom when they want or get a drink or just take like, you know, a mental break. And there's like not a lot of choice in the activities that you do throughout the day, especially when you get into like first, second, third grade. That was scary for me, but I was almost willing to push through that, you know. And I hear this in a lot of kind of the talks on your podcast or some families that are like, you know, if it wasn't for that one thing, I just would have been okay with it. Not really okay with it, but we would have just done that because I didn't see an alternative. And then at that point, I was just being kind of open-minded and I was thinking about education, and we were at the library. And so like this awesome, curious mindset of like open and curious mindset, which I think is like the most amazing place you can be. And so at the library, I was looking at like the new rack of books, and there was a new book on unschooling. And I was like, oh, I'm sure this is about homeschooling, which I know is like a religious thing. But it's education, so I'm going to keep an open mind and I'm going to read it and just glean what I can from it. So whatever. And then I read it like within 3-4 days and I was like, wow, like that makes so much sense to me. It agreed with everything in my master's program for education, and it disagreed with almost everything that was happening in the classroom that I experienced.
Yeah.
So we jumped on board again, like with everybody's consent and a supportive family as well. And even my son, he was like, you know, I had to choose between going to school or doing whatever I wanted. And he was like, it was a no-brainer.
Yeah. So how old is your son now?
Now he's 10. When we started, he was like 5 or 6 at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. What a story. There's so much just coming up for me there. First of all, I was just thinking, because the other day I was reflecting on what kind of curriculum, like if I look back on my children who are now older, they're 17, 16 and 11, and I could design the perfect curriculum based on what I know about them now, it would be the craziest curriculum. So that I love that idea of this place that goes, okay, this is what's interesting. That's the curriculum. Because the idea that we could go, okay, these are the things that this child needs to know. When you see a child, really a curious child in action, there's no way you could kind of guess really what that child would open up to or take an interest in. That's great that kind of project does exist, isn't it, really? Which is kind of what unschooling does, isn't it? It's that, okay, here's what they're interested in, and that's what they're going to follow. Yeah, that's lovely. Yes, because I was actually just thinking the other day, wow, I'd have had to create a curriculum that involved so many bizarre things that I don't even know about and I'd never heard of them. They weren't even on my radar. Yeah, and then the other thing just coming up there is that how schooled we are and how hard it is to let go of that, of our own school experiences that are actually deeply ingrained in us. I think there is a sort of a reckoning with our own past, isn't there? When we choose a new path for our children. I don't know. Did you feel that?
Yeah.
Feel that you had to undo some things there or look at some things?
Yeah. It's a constant battle. for me, just trying to, it's being intentional. That's what it is. And it's so easy to not be intentional. And maybe that's today's society. Maybe it's just, you know, a human thing. I'm guessing it's a today's society type of thing. But if you're not intentional, then you can't follow through with what your values are. You can't support like the person that you want to be and the family that you want to grow. And a lot of the things that what you're talking about, like are that were schooled into us as children, you didn't have time to really say, well, oh, let me separate that from myself, or that's not something I agree with. So, you know, I'm just going to go along with the system, but I'm going to push back in my mind. Like we're not mature enough to gather that perspective. And only by looking back can you start analyzing all the things that were kind of integrated right into who you are that you may or may not agree with. Yeah. And so I feel like my adult mission right now is kind of picking through all that stuff and saying, well, what supports who I am? And I really love that about unschooling. And like there's that concept of deschooling, which is so often applied to children, but it's so much more important for adults. And it's
absolutely
it's for me, it's never ending. Like I'm always, this stuff just keeps coming up and I can't see an end to all the things that I'm picking apart about myself and about societal views that I've just accepted or gone along with or fit in for or like people please to make happen and whatnot. And what you were talking about, again, a bit of like the schoolishness, and with our podcast that we started, it was actually my son's idea. And we were listening to Stuff You Should Know, which is this really awesome podcast, an American podcast, where they just pick any topic and then they talk about it for 40 minutes, 50 minutes. And it could be dinosaurs. It could be bones. It could be anything. It doesn't even have to be science. It could be George Washington. And they really cover it and they have a lot of like research around it. And we love them because they were so funny and they would always open with like a joke that really almost stupidly introed, like it was just kind of a silly way to intro the topic. And it was like a cheap laugh and a dad joke or something along those lines. And there were dad jokes throughout it. And we loved that kind of humor. And so my son, one of the days that we were driving somewhere, he was like, why don't we do something like this? Could we make a podcast? And here he's like 5 or 6 years old. I was like, why not? Why can't we do this? And so I did a little like research, figured out the quickest way that we could start that. And we've been roughly following that method for a really long time. So what's really cool is that it supports Kai's interest. So each episode is something that he's interested about, where we've covered like sauropod dinosaurs, or Delta Force, which is like this elite military organization, or tardigrades, ninja, anything that like was really an interest of his. We took a lot of time and really delved in and did sometimes like a series of like 5 or 6 episodes on ants or wild cats. And it was really fun doing all those little bits. The reason I'm talking about that in terms of schoolishness is because for me, I jumped on that idea so readily. And in hindsight, I think it was because it was visible learning. It was this idea that unschooling worked and we were accomplishing things and I can show everybody like, look how good we are. Look, it's, and even for myself, like, look, this works and look how much we know, which is such a kind of a schoolish mindset.
Hard to get away from the fact that there may be no output. Your child may produce nothing, they're learning, but so to trust in that, I can see why you might jump on something that shows a concrete evidence.
Yeah, in the most recent, like in this season, we're on season 5 now, which is kind of super exciting. We decided to change format a little bit, where instead of covering like a whole topic and being almost like empirical about it and like this is the right thing, we started going with questions, and we've kept a question wall about all of the things that pop up in our minds. And it's my question, it's my wife's questions, and a lot of it is anything that comes up between my son Kai and I. So now we're just answering questions, and it's really cool how it's kind of a different format instead of like this whole topic. It's like, well, let's just answer this one question as deeply and as well as we can. It's kind of easier, it's quicker, and it's still fun. It's still kind of the same thing that we were doing.
That's Unschooling with Kai, right? If someone wants to check that out.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, oh, that's great, yeah. And so how have you seen your son's sort of interests? Do you see threads that go through? Are you often surprised by what comes up?
It's been a while since I've been like genuinely shocked. But there definitely were moments where I was like, what is going on here? How does he know this stuff? But I think I follow kind of more closely like what he's doing. I think the best way that you can understand your child is to like kind of see through their eyes. And the more that you can do that, the more that you can understand why they disagree with something, why they're interested in something, even if it's not something you agree with or not something that you're interested in. At least you can understand the excitement and the energy, then that's a really good way to connect as a family, right? So yeah. A lot of the things that I've seen that Kai has been interested in revolve around animals, because he loves stuffed animals. He loves reading like a Wings of Fire book, which is about dragons. He was really into this book series called Warriors that was about cats. And that was like, those were 200-page books that he read like maybe 19 of them in the first 2 years. So he was like 6 and 7, maybe. Mm. I think my wife was saying like, I'm pretty sure you read more pages of any book that I've ever read ever. And so those were the times that like when we first opened up what was possible, it was really surprising to see like what he could achieve. Mm-hmm. And those were the surprises that came out for us.
I love what you just said there. My last podcast guest, Donna, was talking about the idea of possibility and opening up to what's possible rather than when, you know, a curriculum really limits what is possible. But that idea of sitting with curiosity and seeing what actually comes, what will my child bring? What will they do? It's a really lovely concept. And I think that, we're often surprised. I remember just that feeling of how on earth do you know that right at the beginning? Like, how can they know that? How do you know that? And I would actually say to them, how do you know that? And they'd go, well, I'm not sure. I just kind of do. And it'd be absorbed somehow, you know. But that, and also seeing through their eyes. And again, we have to be, there's something a little, you have to get a bit humble, don't you, I think? You have to keep almost swallowing your own ego, I think, as well, because oftentimes we really do. I sometimes still feel that sense that I know what's right, or I'm assuming something, and I realize I've got an assumption there that's kind of alive. And you have to keep sort of knocking those things back, I think, don't you, to stay open and to keep the field of possibility wide open. You have to make sure you're not crowding them with all your stuff.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I think in the beginning, I had this great idea that I wanted to be more of a facilitator than a teacher to my son, which, you know, definitely started me off on the right foot. But there is a lot of learning, and having gone through like a master's in education and like being a certified teacher, there is so much to unpack that is just accepted in school and in society and, you know, the right way, and things that aren't necessarily science-backed, but are just kind of practice or doctrine in school. And so kind of sifting through all of that, and the kind of the beautiful moment is when I started seeing my son become an expert on certain areas. And I was able to, with confidence, just accept what my son was saying. Like he was really into planes and military, and like, much to my chagrin, I'm like, all right, well, I don't want to be a military family here. But he was so interested in like the engineering, the speed, the in the same way that toddlers love like dump trucks and whatnot, right? Or big dinosaurs. And so he was really interested in huge cargo planes, and he could give us like, oh no, that's a C-17 and it's got, you know, there's no props on a C-17. And then this is how many people that have to man it. And this is how much cargo it can hold. And it can't go that far. No, they have to refuel in air. And I just had to take the back seat and be like, that's awesome. You go. Like I trust you on this. I trust what you're saying. Whereas for any other adult in a conventional setting, you're like, well, how do you know so much? Right. And are you sure you know that? And so I think initially it was more of a, let's research that together. And then I was like, okay, I just trust you now because I know that you're learning so much. And there's sometimes that he comes up with facts, maybe from like YouTube or a certain book that might be outdated. And then I kind of fall back into that initial, like, well, let's see, how do you know that? And then let's see if, because what I know is different, and let's see which one might be right, or if they're both right, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, that brings up quite an interesting point, I think, which is most unschooling children become very good researchers. They become good at finding out what they need to know on their particular journey. I've noticed that mine will consult various sources. It's hard to fool them. You know, when they want to know something, they'll double check, and they know what a reliable source is. They know what a reliable source is not. So they've got quite a strong criteria for deciding whether that's correct or not, whether that's something they're going to follow, whether that's something they're going to listen to. But they have an ability to pick through and to make those very wise choices, I think, as to what they're looking for, because they're not having to sit there passively accepting. It's a very active process, isn't it, the learning?
Yeah, and I think that's true even for like kind of non-academic things. Like my son loves YouTube, and so some of the videos that he watched initially, I was like, oh my God, that's so annoying. And I wanted to be like, don't watch that one, just stop. Like, and the truth is that he was picking up stuff from videos that I hated, and maybe even as long as it was interesting to him, that he was still engaging with the content and taking in stuff and learning new things. And whether that was like social aspects or, hey, this kid's being a bully to this other kid, let's see how that plays out. Is that something that I want to choose to be or not choose to be? You know, kind of in the same way that dramatic play really serves younger kids in acting out all the possible, like even death just comes up sometimes in dramatic play, or divorce. And parents are so quick to say like, no, like let's cut it, nip it in the bud. But really that's healthy for kids to engage with, and then to decide what that means and how it should look like and how that feels to them and what character they want to build for themselves.
Yeah, that idea, of course, that they're getting different things than we are. I think, you know, obviously one of the biggest questions that people have when their children sort of come out of a school setting, whatever, it tends to be around screens. And it's so easy, isn't it, to jump in with a judgment and assumption that this is a waste of time or that this has no value. But there's some inherent value for the child. For some reason, that's what the child is choosing in that moment. And I think it's just really interesting to think a little bit more about that, you know. But to hold the judgment is very hard for many adults, isn't it? Is that something that you found at the beginning?
Yeah, it's such a layered question. I think in the beginning, I was so supported that I did have a lot of time and kind of mental capacity to think through all of that and be intentional. Even still, there was all of, I still had like all my baggage, all my parental baggage that I was bringing with me, right? So that took time, even with the intentionality that I was bringing to the table. So I think there were a lot of things that I had to think through, and we kind of worked into a rhythm of consent and agreement, which weren't initially on my radar at all. And the idea that I'm not in charge, like, sure, I can be in charge when there's like an emergency, and I might have more experience than my child in a certain area, and I might have good advice. But that's all part of a conversation. That's not part of a rule that I'm creating. And the rules that we create to keep our families safe and healthy and everyone happy can come at a unanimous agreement. So we shoot for maybe once every week, once every 2 weeks to kind of have a family meeting about what's going on. Hey, what's coming up in the next week? What are some mistakes we made? What are some things that we can celebrate together? And then we talk about kind of the agreements that we have in place. Are they working? Are they not working? Is there another agreement that we want to make? And sometimes something is a frustrating issue for weeks at a time, where if we can't come to a unanimous decision on what to do about it, it sits there. And so we still have to be thinking about it, be creative about it. And sometimes there's agreements that work for now, but maybe not always, or we have to put something in place. So let's kind of agree. And it works in a way. Mm. So this whole idea that consent like is a priority has become like really strong on our radar, that is the way that we can engage with our children and not treat them like quote unquote children, right? To treat them like other people, you know, young people with the same value, the same worth.
Yeah. You know, you were talking about school, and I was reflecting on my school experience, which was not a terribly negative school experience, but there was a huge sense of disempowerment and smallness, particularly in primary school, you know, that sense that I don't really have a voice. And often remembering times where I felt profoundly uncomfortable or in distress or whatever, but there was no way that I could explain that. It wasn't really a place that could hear that. And I think if you had, everyone would say, oh, you're okay, come on. You know, we just don't really do that to adults in the same way that we do to children. And we push them out into the world, whether they're ready or not. And I think that's very disempowering. And the idea of consent is empowering. And to be an adult then who has a voice, who understands themselves, there's a basis there, that consent, you know, that being empowered throughout, I think is incredibly important, you know, for these are the future adults. We should be treating them as we would like them to be.
Yeah, I feel a lot of what you're talking about. And I think in school, when I was a student, reflecting on my student days, definitely in like grade school, primary school, the strongest thing that stands out to me is boredom. And like that's not terrible, right? That's not a terrible thing. I wasn't, you know, traumatized in that way. But to have your strongest memory be being bored, it's like, well, how much time was wasted?
Oh.
Where I wasn't interested or wasn't engaged in what I was doing.
I remember waking up on a Monday morning with a kind of a, you know, that like the sinking stomach, because I would spend my weekends. We were very at home. We were very free. It was quite an unschooly atmosphere at home. So I'd be doing whatever I was doing, you know, getting on with my life, perfectly happy, quite creative. And then Monday it was like, oh, life stopped for me, school. Yeah, I really felt that quite strongly from a young age. I felt like it wasn't.
Wow.
I couldn't quite understand it, but I couldn't really rebel against it because I didn't have that capacity either, or that sense of empowerment.
No.
To sort of do anything.
No. And I think I kind of, as a child, also led kind of a very unschooly life in what I was allowed to do and get creative in different ways. And at the same time, I still think that our generation was very disempowered and not listened to, right? And I, you know, what you were talking about with your memory in school, like one thing that really stands out to me that bugged me in school was when it got really dark during the day and there was like a thunderstorm rolling in. And I think normally people would say, I really hated school when it was a bright day and I was able to get outside. But for me, it was when there was a thunderstorm happening. That made me want to be cozy in my house. And it was so disconnected from the school environment where I had to keep doing something that I didn't want to do. And I couldn't just like cuddle up under a blanket, and maybe the lights went out and then we put some candles out and it was just kind of a nice atmosphere. And that was my memory where I always reflected on how negative that experience was.
That's so interesting. I was actually just thinking last week, I can't remember, it was Monday and it was rainy, it was dark. And you know, and it was like someone said, oh, should we just have some hot chocolate today? And we thought, well, do you know what? And that day, oh, a couple of kids, you know, there were colds and things. We were just like, do you know, let's just make this a stay at home, have a hot chocolate day. And it was just so delightful. And it was a Monday. And I thought, well, what is more valuable than a Monday, you know, in a nest at home? No one's doing anything. And that, but we're doing lots somehow. We're just, you know, and it was just really delightful. And I felt really relieved to be able to really enjoy that for what it is. Because I think some years ago, I felt a little bit nervous about that because we're not actually getting anything done. You know, it's so much to be able to feel into what feels good right now and to be together as a family or, you know, those big things. And that doing thing, it's almost like, you know, you talk about intentionality. Sometimes we have to intentionally not do, you know, or be intentional about being okay, not being terribly productive today. Or
yeah, you're talking about like connection to self. That's what I'm hearing, that string throughout.
Absolutely. Yeah, that connection. In fact, that's something I've thought a lot about, which is that idea that as we go through life, if we are connected to ourselves, what we're driven by, that thing that really motivates us, or how we are, or, you know, our mood, if we're connected to that, we're probably going to do okay. And it's that disconnect that can often happen when your voice is not heard, or you don't have an ability, like you said, to go to the toilet when you want to drink water when you want to, you know, you have to keep pushing through, or seeking someone else's approval over what feels right to you. They're really big themes for, you know, for a happy life. They're just very, very important things. And I think we ignore them at our peril, really.
I do believe that school, kind of the whole school system, necessitates a disconnection from self in a lot of ways. And that's terrible. And I think what's interesting is that when I started unschooling, I was just talking about this yesterday. When I started unschooling, I was so happy to be out of the school system. I was like, you know, bye. Won't be seeing you. Won't be seeing you anytime soon. And at the same time, in my mind, I was also like ignoring it. I was letting it go. I was avoiding it in a very not so healthy way. And I think the idea that like unschooling or self-directed learning or liberated learning, whatever we call it, is a privilege. And that if we are not still thinking and trying to improve upon school, then we're just privileged. We're not liberated. We're not working for the whole. And that's something that I've been grappling with.
Yeah. Have you had any more thoughts on what that could look like?
That's so tricky. I think at the outset, I think what's important is not avoiding it. And that's kind of almost the phase I'm in. And this has been like kind of a long phase for me. Like, because again, like I felt so quote unquote liberated when we started unschooling, and it was so easy to demonize school and to say like, that's bad and we're good. That almost that polarization. But for a lot of people, school is a reality and a necessity, and they don't have a choice in the way that some of us do. So I think grappling with that and realizing that is almost a first step if you're kind of disconnected or avoiding that. Beyond that, it makes me weary thinking about it. Like, what can we do? And for all of the smart minds that I've heard talk about this, so many have said, it's better to just unschool because school is not going to change anytime soon. And that was kind of what that whole mindset that was imparted upon me. But in some ways, I think that's correct. And then in other ways, it's not correct at all, because I think we have to think about everybody. And we have to find kind of that the humanity in all of us, and that the common denominator, which is important, that we all have the humanity. And to let go of that, that's not natural. And it's kind of the wrong mindset. And I think that leads to a lot of the polarization that happens today in society. Sorry for going deep there, but I think it's a pretty important thing.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And in a way, I guess that this sort of natural polarization between unschooling when school exists because it's so far away from it. But you're absolutely right. And I do think, you know, the actual idea of school is a good idea. Many children love to learn with other children. Many children love to be in a place where we can bring them new ideas and like the actual idea, you know, unfortunately, the system as it's sort of evolved. That yeah, that the kind of the power over the disempowerment, the control, and that kind of set curriculum test. But well, that's an interesting thought. Perhaps we just have to leave it there as a thought to be grappled with. But I'm sure many people do wonder what that can look like. I mean, to a certain extent, perhaps it's yeah, encouraging other spaces where children feel empowered. And yeah, I don't know. I don't. I can't think what it looks like. Yeah.
A couple of things that come up for me that I'm thinking about are this idea of decentering school. Have you heard about this?
No.
So this idea, and there's so many other people that can say it better than I can, but the idea that school is important to a certain extent, but it doesn't have to be the center of our lives. And the parents don't have to be the agents of school, and push school curriculum on their children. So it's, and how this can look is like, okay, I know you have homework, but if you're not getting it done because you want to go outside and play and you need your time, then let's just do that and you don't get your homework done. Or maybe homework isn't a priority at all in this family. Or in a lot of states, you can choose not to take like standardized tests. And just having like open, purposeful conversations with the teachers about what you're okay with in terms of rewards and punishments, and what's okay for your child, and what your values are. Like, hey, we value the social aspect and a love for learning. So anything that you're doing that takes away from that, we don't value. And I just want you to know where we stand on that. So I'm not looking for her to get A's. I'm looking for her to, you know, XYZ. And that's what we've talked about, and she agrees with that as well. You know, so this whole idea of decentering school, so still operating within the school system, but kind of using your own values. I think in small ways that works. And if enough people can follow that and do what they want for themselves, that school will have to change, possibly.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I guess that, you know, so many adults, as we were saying before, we are schooled. And I talked to someone the other day who said whenever she had a meeting at school, she felt she was 12 years old again and doing it all wrong. And you know, even in that context, the parents aren't always feeling very empowered, because it brings up so much, doesn't it, of our own. I think it's important, you know, if you're unschooling, whatever we want to call it, we don't have to even fixate on labels in any way, that we don't become dogmatic, that we keep open minds, and that all, as you say, we're all we're thinking about really, and looking at what the child, you know, who each child is, and how a child thrives. And it doesn't really matter actually if they're at school or at home. One of my sons did try school for 6 months, and to me, that didn't affect anything about him or us as a family. He was a person choosing to try that, and that was his curiosity at the time, and it didn't diminish anything. He learned a lot about a lot of things in the course of that. It was as valuable as him doing other things. So it's actually not even school, not school. It's can a child sort of choose? How much choice does a child have? How empowered is a child? Is it comfortable to them? Are they in their comfort zone? You know, it's about so many things, isn't it? In the actual place, are they at home or are they there? It's really about how does a child thrive?
There's that possibility that, like, for example, unschoolers can choose school, and then if that's their choice, then
Right.
who's to tell them that they're not unschooling anymore, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It doesn't really matter if these are choices a child's making, and that's part of their journey. But yeah, again, coming back to what you were saying earlier about being intentional, I find that really interesting because I think, yeah, if we're not intentional, you know, all those old patterns that we have will just run. And I think that, yeah, and you were also saying about how the de-schooling, it's the parent, not the child, really. I mean, a child knows how to be a child, and they're going to be a lot more connected with the way they learn, probably than we are now. And that de-schooling and bringing intentionality to every day and watching out for our own little patterns. And for me, in the early days, it was getting nervous about things they were doing, or it was getting over enthusiastic about what they were doing, encouraging them to, you know, write about what they were doing, all those things that we bring in that we think we're being helpful, that feel like good parenting, you know, like just watching ourselves and what we're doing and how we're holding it. I think to me, that's the intentional practice, I think, which is a piece of work, right?
It is. And it's so easy to think about like things like intentionality and mindfulness as like almost a black or white, or like an on or off switch. And really, it's much more of this broad spectrum of possibility. It's so easy to say, like, you have to be intentional. But it's more of like, be more intentional than you've been, right? You know, there's no maximum level of intentionality. And there's no minimum level, and there's no right or wrong. It's just like, the more intentional that you can be, the more that these outcomes will match what your values are, right?
Yeah. And I think also, again, getting connected to yourself is really important in all of it, isn't it? To know, does this feel right? Does this feel, it may not look like what someone else would consider learning, or, but does it feel right? And I think if it feels right, it probably is right, is a general way of going at the beginning as well.
I recently wrote this article about teachers that move into unschooling or self-directed education. And how, you know, how we were talking, that's definitely like a phenomenon. It's a large phenomenon.
Yeah, lots of teachers on the podcast.
And it's still hard. It's even harder for teachers, even though they see, you know, they see the path, but the path is harder for them because they are so extraordinarily schooled in a certain way. They have this certain mindset, right? And I think for any teacher that feels like they can't accomplish this because of a mindset or because of, you know, roadblocks, I think teachers essentially have two things, and that is the ability to be reflective and the ability to be flexible. My guess is that literally with just these two skills that you can be the best parent, the best self-directed facilitator that's necessary. And just the path isn't like getting to somewhere. Your goal is not to get to somewhere. Your goal is to like improve little by little. And that's what teachers are taught, to be reflective and flexible. And if you see something that's happening that's not working out in your home life, or, you know, in the learning that is in your family, then just, you know, reflecting on it, and then talking with everybody, communicating, and then being flexible about which way that you're going next, without this set intention of like, we have to arrive here. You're going to get where you need to be, and you're going to be fine. Like, those are the only two skills in my opinion that you need to make it through.
Oh, that's interesting. Yes. I never thought of it like that. I've always considered with teachers, it's interesting that they have that experience of the things perhaps that don't work so well at school. But then you think, yeah, that must be quite hard to undo the how it should look. What does learning look like? Yeah, thank you. That's really interesting. I'm sure that would be really comforting to any teachers out there.
What's cool is that teachers are empowered in that way too, because whatever they're doing gets to be so much more individualized, instead of dealing with 20 or 30 children or one child that's making a lot of other children riled up. You might be dealing with anywhere from 1 to 4 or 5 children, and that's a lot more empowering. And you can be so much more creative. As a teacher, I feel like that was one of the things that I wasn't allowed to do, was to be super creative with what I was teaching and how I was teaching. But in your home life, like, you can do it, like, the sky's the limit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because here everyone has such different interests, and some of them, you know, we've got, one absolutely passionate about horses and animals. One, it's all geography, linguistics. So we've got politics, martial arts, all these things, which, you know, I'll know a little bit about each, but none of them are anything that I could possibly lead the way on, really, you know. And a big feature of our home life are endless conversations, you know. My boys in particular, we can have like 4 hours of political economic debate at the kitchen table, which fortunately my partner really enjoys. But it's so interesting, isn't it? There's nothing there that I could possibly have taught. And until quite, you know, yet I felt I would lead the way. And so, sorry, so sometimes I realize that my place or my role on some days, which I enjoy very much, is simply to make sure it feels like a welcoming, relaxed space where whatever needs to arise can arise, whatever interesting thought that someone has can be had, and it can all be brought to this place, that there is no set way the day has to go. And I really enjoy those days. My middle son in particular, the little catchphrase, whenever he appears, he says, "Do you want to know something interesting?" And there will always be some mind-blowing fact that he's come up with. You know, so the whole house was like, you know, something interesting, something interesting. And I love that about the day. And it's all sort of surprising. But I have to always get out of that mindset that I know how the day might go or I know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
In a way, I've been fortunate because their interests are so different from mine that it's really clear that I can't direct them in them. It was very obvious from years back that they've gone, like you said about the aeroplanes and the plane, these guys have just gone on, you know, on things that I can't really lead on, which I think has been helpful for me, actually.
I think a lot about what you're talking about, kind of this goal for the day. And I think your goal is beautiful and I think it's honorable. And it's awesome just like to allow a safety and comfort and to allow whatever comes up. And it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody's off on that rabbit hole, but at least to like honor it, right?
Yeah.
And this is definitely like that open and curious mindset, which I think is so important for parents to try to get into or more be, right? Not that there's an on or off. I think what kind of an important part of this conversation is that we're not always there either, right? We're not always empowering. One of the things, like I can turn this back on myself, one of the things that I have really struggled with is it, with myself in terms of allowing such an awesome and empowering environment is I have anxiety. And so if I don't work through that and try to be more intentional and mindful in the moment, that I rush to do things or get something done or check off the box or get to the appointment on time. And that's at the cost of connection with my son. And it took me a while to figure this out. Because really it was, why am I raising my voice right now? What is causing me to feel so angry in these moments? And then I had to like check myself and say, wait, we're so much more liberated than a classroom. And there is no, sure, appointments, we want to make it on time. Otherwise, we're going to have to reschedule or pay the fee or what have you. But if yelling to make things happen on a set timeline that is constructed in my head, mind you, not my son's head, my head, that I definitely have to rethink what my goals are here and what my behaviors are. And that was really mind opening, like thinking through again, probably my own baggage in this. And it's not that that's necessarily my baggage, because anxiety it's just a thing. That's not something that's going to go away for me, but I can manage it in certain ways given the right reflection and flexibility, right?
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Because I think that in unschooling, something that happens is when you are aware that this is the space I want to allow my child, and then the realization that, oh, I'm projecting that onto the space, we're often left looking at ourselves. It's a natural consequence. I think that is de-schooling, isn't it, really? Going, oh, what's this?
Yeah.
What am I looking at and what can I do with this? Yeah, wow, that's I think it can go very deep for us all. We all were going to find all sorts of things there, and we're going to have to question it. Many people shout at their children, their child does this, so they shout, is the action and the reaction, to sit in the middle of that and go, okay, hang on a minute, what's actually going on here? Oh, it's nothing to do with my child, this is me, you know, that's the work, isn't it? That's the work.
It's a process that brings up so much vulnerability and like apologies to my child. Like that wasn't something that I thought was so important. And I was like, wait, I treated him wrongly. So I need to go back and touch base with him and say, I'm sorry. And that's not what I intended to do. And I'm moving forward. I'm looking to do this in a different way and call me out if I'm doing this wrong in the future. And what feels good for you?
Well, what a beautiful example for your child of seeing vulnerability. And if you don't mind me saying, also from a father, which is almost more unusual than from a mother, that to be able to see the vulnerability, to work through that, to see how your parent processes that, you know, that's huge really, isn't it? For them to be able to see themselves and how they respond to things. I think that takes us to that idea as well, that this is about process. This is about how we deal with the moment. This isn't about, as you say, getting the child from A to B or getting them to 18 as quickly as possible and as efficiently as we can. This is about looking at a moment and reflecting when something, you know, has gone differently, so that they are able to move through life processing things healthily, moving forward in a way that feels right, that feels connected. It's so much more than content, isn't it, really? So much more.
I think when I started apologizing to my son, it really opened up this avenue to also assert myself and my own boundaries, because I was basically saying, I'm pretty sure I crossed, you know, your boundaries in this way, and let's have a talk about that, and I apologize. And then at the same time, I was thinking, well, in what ways am I allowing my son to cross my boundaries that I just feel as a parent that I have to do that? And so it was more of this, and there's this duo, Radical Learning. I don't know if you know them. They had this really good, so poignant quote, and they were talking about basically that you want freedom, but freedom not at the cost of others' freedom. And so this idea that we want children to be able to do anything that they can, but if it's pushing our boundaries, we need to be assertive for that. And I think in a lot of ways, because I'm also a coach, a lot of the coaching that I deal with is empowering, you know, my goal is empowering children. But I think to achieve that, we have to first empower adults with, you know, things like knowledge and skills and whatnot, and boundaries is definitely a part of that.
And you know, again, we're always modeling whether we like it or not. Our children see what we do, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think that that's something I struggled with at the beginning, you know, like feeling I have to give everything and frequently being absolutely exhausted, and then realizing that if I don't want to do something, it is okay to say no. And I can certainly say, I'm really not up to that now. I'd love to do it tomorrow or in an hour. Like, I'm happy to have a conversation around it, but it's a no for now because I'm very tired and I really need to take care of myself. And I would feel very guilty. That would feel very unusual to me to start with. But now I understand that it gives them permission to do that too. And again, sometimes I think it's good to think of your child as an adult. When my daughter, for example, when she's 30, 40, I want her to be able to say, you know, I'm saying no to you right now because that's too much for me. I want to see that in her. But if the model she has is this kind of martyr, you know, then that's not going to come naturally to her either. So, yeah, I think that's really important. Whatever we want for them, we really do need to be able to give ourselves permission for. We have to keep turning it back on ourselves, I think, which I think it's hard, but it can be ultimately very fulfilling and really can help us grow as people.
That connection to self is definitely a two-way street. We want that for our children, but we also need that desperately for ourselves.
Yeah. Daniel, we're coming kind of to the end now. I always ask at the end if there's any particular advice that you might have for someone about to sort of jump into this, anything that feels particularly important to you in all of this?
You put me on the spot here. I feel like I want to say that find a place to have the conversations that you need. And whether that's with supportive friends or a therapist or a coach or yourself, you know, in your own time, or a journal, and really shoot for finding out what your values are, identify them, and move forward and figure out where your behaviors are not supporting your values.
Beautiful. Lovely. Oh, that's great. I love the way you've phrased that. I'm going to sit after this. I'm going to think about that. Thank you. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Daniel. It's just been absolutely lovely talking to you.
Yeah, this has been really awesome. Thank you so much, Esther.
Great. Well, let's stay in touch. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye.